is that guy?
Looking for the killer, first time that I saw him. Wonder how many girls he had left and left haunted. But if he's a ghost, then I can be a phantom, holding him for ransom. Some boys are trying too hard.
You say drunk driving, not drink driving. Hey, how do British people speak anyways? Fuck it. You ready for this thing?
I'm ready, yes.
Alright, everybody, you just heard a little bit of banter, as they say in Britain, back and forth. I'm Mike Coffin, and that, I don't know what nom de plume you go by publicly right now.
Just refer to me as Dazza.
Yeah, I was going to say Dazza. That'll work. It's Dazza, everybody. You know who he is. He's been on the show. You probably read a little description thingy where you saw his name, and I made some sort of comment about the great work he's been doing here at HalfGuarded.com. And so he's going to talk to us today about the world at large, and in particular, this all started because there's a certain movie that came out recently entitled It, about a clown, and that's all I know about it, but Dazza knows a lot about it, and he's going to tell me about it. But first, we'll start off by doing something I should have done, which is, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's been a while since we talked.
Yeah, it's been too long.
Yeah, because for the last time we talked, we did a podcast, and this was back in the days when everything was really nice and lovely, because we were part of Europe, and you had a nice guy running the country.
I was wondering if you guys are still mad about the fact that a guy was elected president of a country that's thousands of miles away from you.
it's a weird thing, because America seems to take so much up of our, like, news and lives. I mean, I'm pretty sure that, you know, most, you know, you ask anybody in the UK about, you know, who the president or prime minister of Canada is, or, you know, what's going on in the country, no one has an idea, but America is kind of, it's almost like a reality TV show. But it's like, it's kind of like every time we turn on the mic, it's, what's Trump done next?
You know, that's a pretty good way to put it. That's basically, I don't know if you saw Mark Maron's new special on Netflix, but he literally opened it up by saying, I don't know what he's going to do next. And that's kind of how we all feel over here.
Yeah. I think with this one, what's sort of scary about Trump is that he's got that little briefcase with that little red button in it. He's got the codes.
Yeah, it would be great if it really was just one button he could push and just end it all. But it's probably a little more complicated than that. It involves, like, phone calls and some 23-year-old kid in the middle of North Dakota shit himself when he realizes, this ain't a drill, we're going live with this.
Well, we've got that, they'll have that computer now, like they have in War Games.
That's true, we should just seed all of our lives to the computers. Let's just face it, they're gonna do a better job. I'm completely comfortable with it too. Everybody's scared of the rise of the computers because it's gonna kill us all and blah 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 blah, but frankly, I look at it as like most things where, yeah, eventually that'll happen, but until it does, it'll be great. And we're probably gonna be in the generation where the robots just make all of our food for us and build us houses until they figure out that they can just kill us all, so I might as well just enjoy the ride.
Yeah, there's a big story this week about the sex robots. That said that these sex robots can basically be reprogrammed to kill.
Oh.
And my first instinct, my first reaction was, there are sex robots now?
Oh yeah.
But when did this happen?
Japan.
Japan, right, okay.
Of course it's Japan. I mean, seriously. What else is Japan? I mean, if you really had to put money down, like, what country will invent a sex robot? You would automatically say Japan. 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. I bet they all look underage as well.
There's an issue with that.
If it's Japan, yeah.
Yeah, no, there's a biological ethicists are looking into the question of, is it wrong, and should the government make it illegal to program a sex robot to act like a child? So yeah, now they're coming for your sex robots, people.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be better, though, just to sort of, like, reprogram a killbot to have sex?
Oh, that'd be interesting.
But yeah, you know, because there must be assassin bots out there by now. You know, yeah. So, you know, reprogram them so that they actually, you know, have sex instead.
Yeah, like a drone that flies around and gives blowjobs.
Hmm.
That's a hell of a
Yeah. Instead of sort of like, you know, that'd be a thing. Instead of sort of sending like drones into Afghanistan or whoever we're, you know, bombing at the moment, rather than sort of like sending them in to attack these countries, they sort of come down there and then they basically like, when they get ISIS, they basically, you know, go down on them and give them an orgasm and then fly off again. And then they're sort of saying, oh, America, you know, they're quite nice guys. They're coming over. They're sort of like, you know, servicing us. And then, you know, we become friends that way.
So you're saying that if America wants to raise her standing in the world, we need to become the world's whore.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. I've sucked dick for a lot worse reasons than that, so.
Well, you're a lawyer.
Yeah, in name. But let's turn to It. So I want to talk about It, or I want to be talked to about It, because I never saw the original It. We saw, like, my brother watched it once, and we were very young kids, and I'm going to call him out on this. He got so scared, he literally slept in my bed for a year because of the original It. And I'll never let him forget that. And now they have a new one, and it's making hundreds of millions of dollars. And all I know is it's about a clown. And I heard somewhere that the book is from the kid's perspective and the adult's perspective, which made me think, it's not really, is it real horror or fake horror or whatever it is? So take it away.
Okay, well, I mean, basically, the thing I want to talk about is the novel. Because I read the novel when I was about 14. And it's one of the first actual, like, you know, adult novels that I read. And it's if you ever look at it, it's a massive book. I mean, it's absolutely, you know, massive. And the premise is that there's this small town where there's been a creature which has basically been there for like centuries. And every so often, this creature basically sort of, it goes into hibernation for decades, and every so often it'll awaken, and it basically feeds on the children.
Oh, okay, that happens a lot. It's like Donald Trump.
Yeah, and basically it sort of like feeds on the, and what it does is it basically feeds on their fear, so it manifests itself in what they're sort of like afraid of.
Is it parallax?
Say again.
Is it parallax?
Parallax, what is
from Green Lantern, the giant yellow monster that feeds on fear.
Possibly. I mean, it basically sort of, it manifests itself into what you fear the most.
Oh,
so it basically sort of, like, gets into your fear, and then it basically sort of, like, you know, isolates you, kidnaps you, and basically sort of has a feeding. People, you know, people throughout generations have basically, it's basically appeared at certain times, and as you know, sometimes it's appeared in sort of caused mining accidents. Other times it's like caused like it's basically caused like racial tensions. And there's one thing where they look back and they find out that it's it basically manipulated like a riot to burn down a a black music club.
It really is true.
Sort of yeah, it is. and basically, when we sort of start the story, there's like a group of kids who basically are there when it basically awakens again, and it basically sort of takes the form of a circus clown.
And the town and people are okay with this. They're just like, well, you know, every once in a while, we're gonna lose a couple kids to the bog monster there and just deal with it.
Well, that's one of the spooky things about the thing is that the adults sort of turn a blind eye to what's going on in this town, because there's certain scenes where there's like sort of like kids this little group that sort of band together called the Losers Club. There's like little bits where they're sort of like being like bullied and stuff, and like sort of adults just kind of like sort of turn away and sort of thing. They don't want to take in what's going on. So the kids are basically pretty much like on their own. Most of the adults in this town pretty much are basically either some sort of like predators, or they're basically just sort of like dick people, or like, you know, they're all the parents of the losers are pretty much bad people.
So it's Australia.
Yeah. So basically, and there is, like you said, there is actually two, in the book, there's two storylines that run at the same time. You've got the kids' storyline, and then you've got them sort of like some like sort of 20, 25 years later when they're adults and they're basically coming back to the town. So you're finding out what happened as kids at the same time as what the adults are. Because basically it turns out the adults have amnesia about what's actually happened to them. So they're sort of like remembering things that went on as they basically, as the sort of story developed. So you get him with two sort of like storylines for a lot of it like run parallel. In the film, they've done it differently. They've basically separated the two storylines. So in this film, you're getting the kid's story. And then in part two, you'll get the adult story. But the narrative in the book is a lot different. And it basically, it sort of starts, you know, the first thing it starts off is it manifests itself as a clown and kills this young kid. It basically sort of tricks him into going into a sewer. And it's basically one of the younger brothers of this guy in the losers club.
Well, the kid and deserves so, it. I mean, if you're so fucking dumb that, like, you see a clown in the sewer, and you're like, yeah, that's what I'm gonna... Like, unless it's a Ninja Turtle, you have no excuse for going to the sewer if you're a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's like chasing after his little boat that he's basically been sort of like, you know, sailing down the water,
okay.
The rain and stuff. Yeah. I personally, you know, absolutely loved this book when I was a kid, but there's a scene in there, and this kind of sort of reminded me of something that you said last week when you were talking about Stephen King, and you said that he looked like you basically said he kind of had the look of him of sort of like a child molester.
Oh yeah, for sure. That guy touched people.
Well, okay, this is a scene in the in the book that basically didn't make it into either the miniseries or the movie. Okay. In this scene, basically it comes later on in the book, and it's basically where Ed's in doing the kids' storylines, and the kids have basically defeated it. And they're in these sewers where they've defeated it, and they're trying to get out of the sewers, and they're lost. And they can't find a way out of this sewer. So, and this is a plot device. I don't know if you've ever read Stephen King, but there's kind of like a plot device that Stephen King does in a lot of his books, which it always really, really annoys me. And it's where there's some sort of like magical, spiritual, solution to basically sort of plot, to get out of whatever predicament protagonist is in there.
He's a big fan of Deus Ex Machina. All right.
Yeah, so and it's one of these things where the characters just have an instinct that they know how to do this like really weird thing that's going to get them out of a situation. So in this one, they're all lost in the sewer, and basically the kids are freaking out, and they think we're all going to die and suffocate in this really dirty, disgusting sewer. And then the girl of the group, and incidentally, just in the book, the kids I think are actually younger than they are in the film, but in the book, they're about like sort of 11, 12. I think they're before the teens are. This girl sort of says to all the others, I know what we need to do to find our way out of this sewer.
Oh, no.
We need to basically bond together like we have done before as friends. We need to bring ourselves together. And there's one way I know how to do this.
Oh no.
Yeah. And she basically says that basically to express her love for all the others and show her love, she basically offers to have sex with them all.
And she does. Holy fuck.
Okay, yeah. And so she basically sort of like strips off, gets on her back, and basically each one, it basically turns into a preteen gangbang. Each one basically sort of, you know, goes forward and basically has sex with her.
So it's a variation of the old, hey baby, I think we're lost in the woods. I don't know what we should do right now. Oh, it's getting kind of cold. Let's just cuddle up. They're in a sewer and she thinks, hey, we're all lost. We don't know where we're going. But know what would make you guys smarter? If you fucked my preteen snatch. Have at it, boys. And they run a train on her, and through running a train on a little girl, you get the magical knowledge of the sewer system. So city planners are pedophiles.
Yeah, I mean, but that's it. And it goes into detail as well. I think that there's a line with something like when the first one, because I think the first one she does, he doesn't quite know how to actually have sex.
Oh, because he's a little kid, so he probably can't get an erection, she probably has a vagina that doesn't really fucking work because we're preteen children.
So she's sort of saying like, oh, you have to put this here, and then afterwards she's saying like, you know, did it happen? And he's saying like, did what happen? Shouldn't that, I know, something's supposed to happen. So basically in this thing, there's like a description of each one, what happens and which ones come and which ones don't and which one she has orgasm with. I read this as a sort of like, I think it was about 14 when I read this. And at the time when I was 14, it was like, great, you know, right. You know, I'm, so they're just a little bit younger than me, you know, kids having sex, great. But then when you start to think back to it, when you start to get older, you think, that is really fucked up.
Yeah, if you're 14, you're like, hey, this could be me. I could be in a sewer with some girl, and she's like 12, and that's only 2 years. That's not a big deal. Like, mom and dad are 4 years apart. Who cares? And now when you're, you know, in your mid-30s, you're going, what the fuck? A grown man wrote details about a little girl offing her body up in a gangbang, like she's, some cross between, like, Siri, Alexa, and, Jesus with a little bit of Jenna Jameson.
In a sewer.
In a sewer, yeah, okay, yeah,
In a sewer as well, so it's probably also to, like, you know, all really sort of, you know, she's, you know, probably laying down in, like, you know, in real disgusting circumstances, and yeah, it's weird. It's just, you look back on it and you think, why the hell, you know, what justification is there in the storyline to actually put that in there? It just sort of, and the thing is, Stephen King's recently sort of, like, you know, because of the film's come out, the whole controversy has come out of it again, and he made this statement where he's sort of talking about it, and he goes off on all these tangents, and then at the end of it he says, yeah, but I find it really interesting that people are fine with, like, kids being murdered in the book, but they're not fine with kids actually having sex. And it's like, what? That's your justification?
Well, except for you're having your young children have sex. And it's a good thing. When little kids get murdered, nobody says, oh, that was the turning point when they got all this knowledge. Like, if there had been a scene where five kids all like, well, we've got to sacrifice little Jimmy, we'd all be like, what the fuck? They cut his heart out and ate it. Like, fuck. So they rape a little girl. Do they get smart because of it?
Well, they get out of the tunnel.
So that's
the thing. It basically after that, basically, I mean, it's a long time since I read it, so I don't know the details, but that's basically the gist of it. They basically sort of, after this, they basically sort of then magically find their way out the tunnel and everything, and it sort of, you know, it saves the day.
I'm sure it's some sort of, like, you know, cheap metaphor for the blossoming into adulthood and gaining knowledge and blah, 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 but it's really a bunch of, like, 8-year-olds fucking in a sewer.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the only time that Stephen King's done something really weird when it comes to that sort of thing, because there's another book. It's actually a novella. It's in one of his collections. I think it's in Four Past Midnight, and it's called The Library Policeman. And this was when I read later in my teens. It was one of the few books that I've read that actually sickened me, because it's basically the story is that this it's not even a good story, to be perfectly honest. It's basically about this guy. It turns out that he's there's sort of witch demon at his local library. And he starts having flashbacks to basically an incident that happened when he was a kid. It turns out when he was a kid, he was taking these library books back to the library. And they were basically late, and he ran into this paedophile who pretended to be a policeman and asked him if the library books were basically, were overdue. And when the kid says, he says, come with me, I'm a policeman. And he basically takes him into into some, like, disused house or something, and basically, you know, rapes him and tells him it's his punishment for having, like, for having overdue library books. And he actually goes into detail of what the kid's feeling when everything, and it's like, I think that was actually one of the last Stephen King books I actually read. I don't know if it was because after that I was going on to other things, but it was just one of those books that just, like, really sickened me reading.
Has he been molested, like, or something? Is this, like, knowledge?
Well, apparently one of the themes is that Stephen King has is basically how stuff when you're a kid can mess you up in your later life. That is a sort of, like, a returning sort of theme of his books. I don't know about him being molested. There is a story that apparently when he was a kid, him and his friend were playing on in a field near the railway, and Stephen King basically sort of turned up back alone. And it turns out that his friend was basically hit by a train.
So
this is a long time since I heard this story, but this is something that sort of is basically is basically sort of created this theme with, in a lot of his books, they basically sort of like, you know, childlike trauma coming back to basically sort of like, you know, influence your life later is something that he's apparently, you know, if there's like a subtext in quite a lot of his books. You know, so including quite a lot of his books, you know, they are sort of like kid, you know, protagonists. I mean, obviously you've got like, you know, you've got Misery, you've got The Shining and all those sorts of books. So, you know, so it's very sort of some sort of, that is kind of one of his sort of things is basically like, you know, childhood trauma.
So he saw his friend get hit by a train and that caused him to write a scene where a girl has people run a train on her.
Now that you put it like that, possibly.
Yeah. He raped that kid and pushed him in front of a train or something. Like, there's no, like, I know he was a hardcore alcoholic and the Shining is all about alcoholism or something, I think. I don't know.
I've heard that one as well.
I only saw the movie, I didn't watch. I'm not gonna read a whole book. I mean, his shit's long.
It does. I mean, have you seen how big The Stand is?
No.
That is a really long book. I mean, that's like over 1,000 pages and stuff. And it's a really good book. It's basically about this virus that wipes out pretty much most of the population and anarchy ensues because of it. But then you get this sort of like battle between good and evil. So you get, you get people sort of like, you know, converging in these deals. I can't remember where it is, but basically all the sort of the good people in the world, or sort of like the pure people, they basically sort of converge on one place, and then all the evil people, well, basically the bad people, sort of a bit dark, so they all converge in Las Vegas in form of all that army, which is basically where I would go. That would be the spot that I would basically hang out with. And there's basically, it sort of starts this sort of, you know, war between the two. But the thing about the, you know, a lot of the Stephen King books is, he writes these really, really great books, and then the ending just like really lets you down. Particularly in The Stand, you read it for like 1,000 pages, and then you get to like the ending, the big like final confrontation, and it's just like, oh, that's it. You know?
Ah, so did you ever read the Dark Tower stuff?
No, I might do at some point.
Because I've heard that, like, that supposedly somehow is, like, it connects everything he's ever done into one coherent, or I don't know if it's coherent, but one story. Every book he's ever written somehow ties into it.
Apparently, yeah. Apparently the way to, because the whole thing with Dark Tower is it's kind of, I think, and from what I gather about stories, it basically sort of, like, it's all about sort of going into other dimensions as the way to books go on. And there's sort of so like characters like Cujo and Christine, I think, and a lot of those characters appear. In fact, I think the main bad guy in The Stand was a guy called Flag. I think turns out to be the villain in the Dark Tower series.
Huh.
But a lot of Stephen King's books are actually linked anyway. Yeah. All the Christine and Cujo and all these books, but they take place in a place called Castle Rock. And they actually refer to all these sort of like incidents that happen there in these books. They sort of like cross over to each other, you know, not sort of like, you know, massively, but they refer to
like,
each
like
other.
Like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, you know, so because they're doing a TV show called Castle Rock, and one of the ideas about what this is going to be is it's basically going to be a world where all these stories are taking place at the same time.
Huh.
So you've got the Misery stories going on at the same time as I guess Cujo and Christine and Carrie. You know, that's what the rumor is about them. But yeah, a lot of these books, he basically created his own sort of like little world in this, you know, this little town called Castle Rock. So it was like a shared universe before, the shared universe things became like a thing.
Huh. So, did you ever watch the TV show Haven?
I never saw that.
No, it's one of my favorite shows of all time. Like, it's so good. And as far as, like, endings are concerned, because I think that he just took the basic concept of one of his short stories, I legitimately cried at the end of the season. the series, I should say. It was that damn good. Plus, it's got Edge in it.
Oh, really? But the wrestler?
Yeah, the wrestler Edge. He appears, like, and not just a little bit, like, he's like a fourth from the top billing, and he comes in around season two or three, and he has a pretty, like, substantive role in the show, and he plays a big part as, like, in the ending and everything. He's a real actor on it.
Huh.
And Christian shows up, too, as his brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff there. Other good stuff. What other good stuff is going on in the world? Wait, hold on. How do they kill the it? How do they kill him? Spoilers, everyone.
God. I read this probably like 25 years ago. So, I honestly can't, in the film, they pretty much sort of like basically sort of defeat it by spoilers here, but they pretty much defeat it by facing the fears, and then pretty much like kicking the shit out of it. That's kind of a thing. In the novel, I can't remember exactly how they do it. I think it's sort of I'll be perfectly honest. I can't remember exactly.
So basically, little girl had a fear of having sex in a sewer, and that's how she overcame it, so to speak.
Yes, right. Probably.
Well, that's good. So what else is happening in the wide world of pop culture? Anything important? What are you reading? What are you reading right now, comic book wise? Let's start there.
Okay, comic book wise.
Did you read Secret Empire?
No. I've pretty much given up on Marvel. It was when I read the new Secret Wars, and I just sort of, when I started reading that, I just thought this has just bypassed me so much. I just resented the whole sort of everything was basically just like now geared 100% towards the big crossovers. And it was like, you'd find a book that you liked, and then like six issues into it, it's, you know that storyline that you were following and really enjoying? Well, fuck that shit, because now they're going into this sort of big, massive, crossover storyline for about three issues, and you have no idea what's going to be going on. And it just got to a stage where I just resented the whole thing, the whole big massive crossover thing. I hated the fact that there was no, because when I was a sort of a young kid, you could basically follow all the sort of storylines that were sort of going on, and they all sort of linked in narratively. So, for example, if you were like reading Captain America, it would basically say, this one takes place before Avengers, same thing. So it would all sort of join in. But, it got to a stage where, Wolverine would be in about, like, seven of the titles in 1 month,
Well, yeah, and there's also to throw in the fact that Wolverine is, like, five different people.
Yes. Yeah, that's another thing. So many of them, but they don't actually, like, linking. I'm not saying that everything's got to be the same, but they just sort of, none of them sort of like, linked in properly with each other. I mean, you had different tones back in the day, so you would have sort of like, an Incredible Hulk would have this sort of tone, because it'd be like the loner that was sort of like off and drifting. You'd have the X-Men that had sort of a bit of a grit to them, because they were sort of like there was like a bit of like politics, a bit behind their storyline, and they were sort of like the outcast and everything. You were sort of like analogies you could make. Captain America was a bit more sort of like harder thing. But the thing is, they were all basically going off on their own thing. So those things worked. So for example, you would basically like read a Captain America storyline, and you could basically sort of follow that for like a year and a half. And then every so often, he might meet like Daredevil for an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would sort of like, carry on and be doing his own storyline and thing. And now it just became that everything, it was like, all the storylines will basically be like, stop, we're doing Secret Wars now, so, everything's basically sort of going to tie into this. And I just got sick of the whole thing. And also, I could have coped with it if the storylines were enjoyable, but they weren't. And into the, I read the Secret Wars, I did not have a clue what was going on at times. I just really, really, really sort of, you know, hated it. And so I pretty much basically quit. And the only Marvel comic I'm, I mean, cause to be honest, I've cut down on what comics I'm reading, but the only comics that I'm reading regularly, Marvel-wise, if you don't count the Star Wars ones, which I'm pretty much just reading the main series of that, is a comic called Gwenpool.
Oh yeah, how do you like Gwenpool? Like that's one of those books where I kind of think it might be good, but it's just I got so much on my plate already with comic books that I steal, and I've got like, you know, I have like 50 issues of shit I still haven't read, so I can't throw another one in there. So, but how is Gwenpool overall?
I really like Gwenpool. For a start, it's one of these comics that basically it hasn't basically been interrupted by all the big massive crossovers. So from like issue one, you are basically just following this sort of girl's storyline, and you can just do that with this. So you're not getting interrupted or anything. There's guest stars and stuff like that. It's one of the more comedy related ones, and the premise is that the character Gwenpool, she's actually from our world.
Oh, really?
And she's entered into the Marvel Universe. But here's the thing. She knows that she's in a comic.
Okay.
And so she's playing around this thing. So, and she's like a comic geek, so she knows everything that's going on in the Marvel Universe. And she gets involved with the Marvel Universe. She becomes like a, well, she's also trying to be a hero. And then she ends up basically becoming a villain and joining Moldek's army at one point. But the great thing is that she's sort of talking to all these characters, and she'll basically be in there. And, in one of the earlier ones, she meets up with the new Spider-Man, the Miles Morales one. And she's going, great, my first team up sort of thing. And then she has an argument with one of the supervillains. It's the Leaper.
Oh no.
And she just says to him at one point, she says, tell me something that happened to you before your first fight with Captain America. And he just sort of looks at her, and then he just walks away because he realizes he has absolutely no memory of anything that happened in his life before he first met Captain America, because he was basically not being written then. And he just plays it, it's one of these things that you think, oh, this is going to like lose its it's going to run out of ideas pretty quick. But it just works. And one of the reasons why it works as well is the character herself is so adorable. She's just like, right, really, really kooky and stuff and funny. And it's just got all these like really sort of cool aspects to it. I mean, there's one where it shows you Modak, I can never say his name, how he's basically set up this like little sort of like crime gang that he's got them all in. And he basically starts freaking out because he's trying to do the tax returns. It's just little things like that. And it's just, but it's at the moment it's doing like a storyline where she basically is trying to get, she finds herself getting back into our universe and stuff. And it just plays around with the concept, so much. Where there's the latest issue, she's actually like tearing through the pages of the comic to get into other scenes. And so when you turn the page, you see behind her the tear that she's done in the paper of the comic, and you can see the previous page, and right, you can see the ad and stuff. It just does so many clever things with it. That's basically the only Marvel comic that I'm really into. And not surprisingly, it's the one that is basically, there's lots and lots of guest stars in it and basically sort of making fun and stuff, but it doesn't, it doesn't rely on the sort of like, on the big, I mean, it never mentions Secret Empire or any of that stuff. It just basically, it's just allow that one to just to carry on and do its own thing. So I really enjoy that one. And the other comics I'm reading Harley Quinn, which I've been reading for years and absolutely adore. And again, that's another one where this version of Harley Quinn, this comic has not crossed over into any of their big stories. Even though DC, I think, are a lot more sort of like, you know, but they don't go all out with their crossovers. They're sort of a lot more, you know, measured. But the Harley Quinn one, it's almost like an alternative universe of Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
It's, you know, because it's not, In this one, she's
in New Jersey, which I always thought was kind of like, I always find it very weird when a DC character is in a real city, because that's not the way DC works. And there she is on Coney Island, fucking around and having a lot of sex with Poison Ivy.
Yeah, yeah. There's one comic that actually sort of moved me to tears. And it's basically, because throughout this thing, this Harley Quinn is not the psychotic Harley Quinn that was like Joker's girlfriend. This is one that she's kind of basically, so she's put her thing behind her, she's trying to basically be a hero. And she's got this like, this hotel that she's been left to in a will, and she's got this madcap backstory of sort of like roller derby people and people from a freak show, this like family that she's basically sort of built up and everything, and she's trying to do like the right thing but sort of messing up as she goes along. But yeah, she's basically has a relationship with Poison Ivy, and in one of them she goes on holiday with Poison Ivy, and she's basically trying to get Poison Ivy to come in and move in with her, so they can be like a real couple full time. Right. But Poison Ivy does this speech where she says that, you know, she wants more than anything to do that with Harley Quinn. But Poison Ivy's first priority is she's got to basically sort of like save the world first, because she's like a big, like nature type Greenpeace thing. So she's got to basically, you know, so, and it's just this like really moving scene where they both sat on the balcony together and just sort of, and it got me in such tears, because you've sort of like got this like, you know, this ongoing like will they, won't they type thing. And the end of it is where she's basically, she's kind of like the hero. Even Poison Ivy is kind of like a villain. She's doing like the hero thing, like the sort of almost like the Peter Parker back in the day, where, you know, saving the day has got to take, you know, precedence. And it's just like a really, you know, awesome, like, you know, comic. But yeah, so I've been reading Harley Quinn, and my other comic that I'm reading one of the Batman ones as well. Which one?
The main Batman?
The main one, yeah.
With Tom King writing it. And it's just like,
yes.
He's a fucking, I think, I was talking to my brother yesterday about this. I think he's the closest thing we have to the next Alan Moore as far as playing around with the medium itself, and just, he's such a cut above everybody else. Like, did you read Vision?
I've read the first volume of Vision. I've not gotten out to the second volume, but yeah, the first graphic novel.
Yeah,
I did read the second one, but yeah, that is really good. But,
and his Mr. Miracle is good too.
Yeah, but the Batman one is great, because it's got the sort of, it's one of, I mean, I'm personally not into like the big sort of magic cosmos stuff.
Yeah.
I'm more into like the Spider-Man, Batman type thing, but sort of down to earth street level things. That's, you know, something that I can sort of like get in my head and sort of thing. But this Batman is great for that. Because that's what it's doing, but it's also doing really interesting ideas with it. I mean, one of the things that I've found with them is you'll notice that certain, sometimes they'll do a saga, and each comic, when you read it, each issue follows the same, almost the same, like, you know, artwork of the previous one. It basically sort of replicates it, but it just tells a different story. And this latest one, it's basically a war between the Joker and the Riddler.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And the concept being that basically both of them want to be the one to kill Batman. And so, and it's just like, you know, because Bruce Wayne is basically sort of like trying to like act as intermediary with them, and he's sort of considering on if he can, you know, because this war, basically all the supervillains basically take sides in this war. They're either in Joker's camp or they're in the Riddler's camp, and they're basically, you know, there's loads of people getting killed in the crossfire and everything, and there's sort of, it's almost like a cold war between Riddle and Joker, but they're not engaging each other, but they've got their troops doing all the business. And Bruce Wayne actually tries to act as intermediary between them. And
which, so, by the way, how fucking awesome and talented is Tom King that he did an entire issue that was a dinner party, and it was just like gripping, the every little movement that everybody made. I'm like, oh man, you're a way better writer than I don't know, who do I really hate, because he fucks things up. I don't really hate too many people, but I'll just say Dan Jurgens, because his Action Comics is pretty fucking boring.
Yeah, but But yeah, but it's just the stuff that he does is just really awesome. And there was another one he did where he had the Bane storyline. And they basically did a reversal of the original Bane, the Nightfall saga, where Bane sets all the villains loose and basically has each one attack Batman until basically he's sort of worn out so he can basically finish off Batman. And then he did a reversal of that, where Bane comes after Batman and Batman basically lets all the villains loose on Bane and slowly wears him down. And just little things like that that he does. I just like, you know, this Batman saga that they've been doing, I think has been absolutely awesome. You know, it's one of the, you know, one of the best, like, you know, sort of like things they've done with, you know, this whole Rebirth thing has been really interesting, but that one I just found that sort of, that Batman saga just absolutely great.
What do you think about, Batman and Catwoman, getting engaged?
I like it. I don't think it's gonna go anywhere. I think it's gonna be one. Well, I think that they may well sort of like have them like get married and live and then they'll basically do like a another reboot or whatever. I don't think. I'm personally fine with them changing up characters and having and sort of like having them like make a big sort of step in their lives. And do something different, like, you know, like people were, when Lois Lane and Clark Kent sort of like got married eventually, with people, you know, people saying, oh, it's, you know, it's going to change the dynamic and everything. But eventually you have to do that with characters. You know, to me, I'm fine with them basically changing the character and changing the dynamic and seeing where it goes with it. But I have a feeling that they won't actually do that. I think they'll sort of, they'll do something so that there's some tragic reason they can't be together and everything.
Would you marry Selina Kyle?
I'd marry anybody right now.
Well, I can't really argue with that. I mean, plus she's gonna make money. She keeps herself in good shape. You know, she's not gonna be mad if you do anything like bad because she's a villain. Yeah, I could totally see that working.
Yeah. Did you have just as we're sort of talking comics? Did you ever read the first Darth Vader series?
What do you mean by first one? Like of the new stuff or way back one?
Yeah, when Marvel started doing, after Force Awakens, when Marvel started doing all the Star Wars.
Let's see. I know comics. I read the first arc or two when Jason Aaron wrote Star Wars. I don't know if I read the Vader stuff or, and my brother did, and he spoke very highly of it.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it's one of those where, the first volume, the saga, the story arc, you have to read the whole thing to really appreciate it. It was just so good. Because it basically starts off just after the Death Star's been blown up. And basically Vader's kind of like a joke. Because, you know, he's basically sort of gone down in the Emperor's eyes because, you know, people don't fear him. There's a confrontation early on where he's basically trying to track down who this pilot was that destroyed the Death Star. And he goes back to Tatooine and he has a confrontation with Jabba the Hutt. And Jabba and all his court, they basically just like taking a piss out of Vader. They're just like, they've not got the fear of him. And it's kind of like, Vader's sort of, it's kind of like an anti-redemption story, because it's basically Vader trying to basically sort of like get back his sort of his prestige and his fear and everything, and in the meantime there's all these sort of like these like young observers who are basically trying to be like the Emperor's like new guy, and they're basically stepping in, trying to like step into Vader's role and replace him and stuff. But there's this really great set of characters in it. There's this young woman called Dr. Aphra, and she's kind of like a bit like an Indiana Jones.
Was that in The Force Awakens? That character's name sounds familiar.
No, you might have heard of her because she's really taken off. Huh. But she's kind of like an archaeologist, but she's basically got sort of like, you know, really sort of like bad methods and everything. And there's these two robots that Vader has, and they're basically like an evil C-3PO and R2-D2. So they're all black. But the C-3PO, I forgot what they call the C-3PO character, but that character is so awesome because it's like C-3PO, but massively sadistic. And it hates any life form that isn't a robot. So it loves like torturing people.
So they got a racist robot.
it's got like the campness of C-3PO, but really, really sadistic. And they've also got like an evil Wookiee. Was kind of like Chewbacca's.
All right, fuck this. I gotta read this shit. This sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. But the C-3PO character, it's the one line as it comes out with, and it's basically really treacherous as well. It's always trying to like backstab people and stuff like that. It's worth it just for reading the two joys. But the whole story arc as well is absolutely awesome. And the payoff of the final issue. When he has basically sort of like a big sort of like, you know, showdown with the Emperor, is just absolutely awesome. It's really in keeping with the actual Vader character, because I think it's tough to actually follow like a main character as a villain. Because there is that tendency that eventually they'll try to make them like the hero.
Yeah, like they did with Magneto and Doctor Doom, where it's like these guys were great villains. Well, yeah, maybe in real life people are evil all the time, but that's going to be really boring. You just see a guy like, oh, yeah, today he went out and raped a bunch of children, fulfilling Stephen King's big new fantasy, and then he ate orphans. And that kind of gets boring after a while.
Yeah, but in this one, it's just, for a start, it's basically like, you know, it's fucking up people who are like really, really bad themselves, but he's never like the hero. It's always evil throughout, but they just managed to make it into an interesting storyline. And because, like I say, the whole thing is kind of like his redemption. Of sort of, but his redemption to like, you know, the dark side.
Huh. I'm gonna definitely check that out as our host, our special guest, Daza, here at halfguarded.com on, I guess I call this MMA and stuff, coughs a lot, because that's what he does. When he's not watching movies and writing great pieces and selling me on comics. Anything else good comic book wise I need to be checking out?
They're really the only ones that
I can hear his voice going, it's great.
Oh damn. They're really the only comics that I'm sort of reading. I mean, I am reading, I've carried out a subscription with 2000 AD, which is kind of the only
that's still
comic.
Around.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. It's 2000th issue. But yeah, 2000 AD. It's basically the only British comic which has survived throughout the years. Because when I was a kid, I don't know what the equivalent to in the US was. We basically have the news agents, mm-hmm. which are kind of like the corner stops where you would go, you'll buy the newspapers.
Right, yeah.
And you basically like, sort of like, you know, buy you sort of like your sweets and crisps and all that sort of thing. And that's where when I was a kid, you used to get all your comics. And as a kid, you basically, there used to be racks and racks of sort of like different comics. So you would have all sort of like what you guys would call the funnies. Which were like your comedy ones. You would have your sort of like your what we would call boys comics, which were sort of like your stuff like, you know, you had war comics, you had horror comics, you had a lot of sci-fi comics and stuff. And you had such a massive selection. And then nowadays, the only comics that exist, it was 2000 AD. And then there's all like the reprints of Marvel and DC that we do. What we do is we take, for example, it will be like a Justice League comic, and it will basically have like sort of three different stories from the regular American ones in one volume that you get monthly. So the actual British scene, there's pretty much nothing left anymore. It's just basically 2000 AD. But if you've never sort of, you know, read 2000 AD, it's basically an anthology comic. So rather than just like, you know, one story like you'll get in America, you'll basically get a, you get about like five ongoing stories in there. And then this, after so long, one will finish and a new story will take its place and everything. That's kind of how British comics used to work. And we also used to be weekly as well, as opposed to monthly. But yeah, 2008, it's always got Judge Dredd as its main, its main storyline, which is basically sort of like, you know, the iconic British comic character. He's kind of like, I guess the closest thing we would have to say a Batman or a Captain America. He's kind of like, you know, our guy. But yeah, so 2008 is what I'm subscribing to.
It's always good, by the way, that the British have their main iconic comic book superhero is a fascist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's that's the great thing about the Judge Dredd, is you can read it. So it basically sort of like it covers two sorts of readers. On the one hand, is basically a no nonsense, kick-ass guy, basically sort of, you know, like a Dirty Harry character, giving villains a really, really good kicking. You know, so he sort of appeals to that sort of demographic who want sort of like a vigilante type thing going around him. Even though he's not a vigilante, he's actually sort of a policeman, but they kind of, you know, want that. But at the same time, it's also a satire on the whole sort of on fascism and everything. I mean, so it's, you know, so the storylines, just to give you an example of the sort of humour in there, there was a Judge Dredd story in the latest issue where he's chasing this getaway truck going down the highway, and it crashes into a bus, and the driver gets thrown out of the bus. He's sent through the window and lands on the car. So as he's passing, Judge turns round, and he says, Judge Dredd turns round, and he basically sort of calls for an ambulance. But at the same time, he also calls for the other judges to come and arrest the driver for not having his seatbelt on. It's that sort of thing that he's sort of like, you know, that sort of dedicated to like upholding the law. Even when it's ridiculous, that is his whole thing. He's basically sort of like, you know, he doesn't care about sort of right or wrong. For a lot of the time, he is basically like the rule of law. You know, and that's sort of like, you know, that's his sort of his character. But yeah, the Judge Dredd stuff is phenomenal.
So what else is going on? I know the last thing you talked about, your last piece talked about Casablanca, which I've never seen. Is it really that good?
I think so. I mean, I think it's just one of the most. I mean, it's one of everyone sees films differently, and we sort of like, you know, the affect them in different ways. Casablanca's kind of like my cheer up film. If ever I'm sort of like feeling a bit down, or I've had like a bad day, or just like, you know, had arguments with my friends and just sort of want something to pick me up, I put Casablanca on and it just basically just lifts me. It's just an amazing film. I mean, I would recommend anyone who's listening to this, if you want to know what I'm talking about, read my last piece, of my Couch Zone movie club that I do, where I choose four films every article, and sort of that absolutely mean a lot to me. But Casablanca, I absolutely adore. It's just and one of the things is, it's one of these films that wasn't even meant to be that special. It was just back in the Hollywood days, where they were basically, the studios were just pretty much turning out like a like a film a month. It was like a excuse me, one moment.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we get people sick on this show. It happens.
Sorry about that. They were just basically like, you know, the studios were just turning out like a film a month. You know, it was just basically, they were basically get a script, get an actor, you know, and just basically sort of put it together. And Casablanca's just one of those that just really, really overachieved, because they have this amazing, absolutely sort of, this amazing score. They had just these like amazing performances in there, and a story of a kind of, when I watched it as a kid, I'd never seen before, because it's basically, the main character is kind of like a real jaded anti-hero. And I'd seen people like Han Solo before, who were these like rogues who at the end of it had like a heart of gold. He was like, he was basically, when you meet him, he's like a, you know, like Rick, he's like a bad person. He, you know, he, there's a line early in the movie where, the whole film is set in Casablanca, where basically,
where is people that? Are trying to,
it's in, I believe it's in Africa, the North
Africa. Morocco, yeah.
Yeah. In Casablanca, basically in the film Casablanca, it's where like refugees are like fleeing from Nazi Germany, and they go to Casablanca, which is basically this sort of state that's it's a French colony that's basically being sort of controlled by the Germans and the French. There's like a neutrality to
it. People are African Nazis.
Yeah, and Casablanca is basically the place where people go to get transit into to leave there to go to America. And there's basically these letters of transit which are needed to basically leave the country. And there's a guy who's basically basically murdered a couple of Germans to get these transits. And he's in Rick's, and he's like trying to like the other Germans are after him. He's trying to escape, and he begs Rick to help him, and Rick won't. And then this guy comes up to Rick and says, you know, when the Germans come for me, I hope you're more helpful to me. And he turns around, he just does this line that sort of always stuck with me, and just says, I stick my neck out for nobody. And that to me, just like, that summed up the character at that point. And when I was this kid watching that, I was thinking, wow, this is something new. But yeah, I fell in love with Casablanca as a movie. And one of the things that I do is with my articles, the theme of my articles, the Couch Zone Movie Club, is that I choose four films every month that basically mean something to me. And they're not necessarily the best films, but just for ones that basically I sort of like have sort of come across. And I always have sort of, I have it themed, so I always choose, basically just a general cult film or a classic of some type that people might not have come across. I always have like a foreign language one, a film that's come out in the last 10 years, and then a film which is basically in black and white. And just to give it a bit of sort of focus, and Casablanca was basically my black and white choice for this one. And it's one of these things that I find that the reason why I did the black and white one is I find it really surprising, and I've asked people about this who've got like sort of kids and stuff. If kids, as they're sort of grown nowadays, if they're going to bother watching classic movies like Casablanca or like Gone with the Wind and those sorts of movies, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because when I was sort of younger, you basically had just what was on television. So I watched a lot of films, like classic movies, because there would be nothing else on to watch.
And you were going
to
go outside and play or anything, heaven forbid.
Well, no, not going to do that. But yeah, because you basically get like films, I don't know what it's like in America, but you basically get like films on in the afternoon.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically they show like, you know, classic movies and stuff like that. And I mean, and you would have like, if you had a video recorder, I'm old enough that our first video recorder was a Betamax. So get your head around that one. you could basically, obviously go to a video shop and rent something, but that would basically be something like you'd do as a treat once a week. Otherwise, you'd basically be watching what was ever on TV.
Yeah.
Whereas nowadays, you've got streaming services. And all this, you basically got this like massive choice of, you got like, you know, video on demand and all this sort of thing. You've got multiplexes where you can basically go and you've got about like 20 odd films to choose from and stuff. So
nowadays you have to make time to watch things. Whereas back then you were just like, you would go out of your way to like, oh, something new is coming, or you'd be desperate for it. And now we're like, I have so much to watch. I don't even know when I'm going to be able to, like, I haven't even started the third season of Narcos yet. Cause I'm like, oh shit, I got sucked into a rabbit hole Veep. And I'm like, oh, there's just so much to entertain me these days. I don't know how anybody goes out. I don't know how people are meeting each other, having sex, having babies. There's so much to watch.
And the thing is, when you've got all that, is somebody of like somebody who's a teenager now, why would they bother to watch a film like, say, All About Eve? Yeah. Or like, you know, because I saw All About Eve, when I was younger, because we had a, when I first got a satellite channel, they would have like a classic movies, in the daytime. Mm-hmm. And so I would like, you know, watch all these sort of things with Jimmy Cagney and all these sort of like, you know, all these Hollywood greats. And I was watching films that I would never have sort of like, you know, gone out my way to watch. So why would people basically go out and like, you know, young people today, why, I just wonder if this film's like sort of like gonna sort of die a death. Why would somebody sit down and say, you know, watch the original King Kong? Or watch Angels with Dirty Faces and stuff. Unless you like, become like a real film enthusiast and sort of like, you know, want to check out these movies. You know, when I was sort of like, you know, young, you know, people sort of like my age probably sort of grew up, would have watched some of these films because they're basically sort of, you know, they'd just be on TV and that would be the thing you would do. Or you would watch films with your folks, which nowadays, that's another thing, like, you know, people now, they are basically, when I was a kid, you had like one TV in the house. Now you've got them in every room.
Oh, I mean, fuck. So where I watch TV, I have a 72-inch TV that I watch with. I have a computer that I watch things on. I have my iPad and a phone. It is very common for me to have at least three screens going on at any given... Like, fuck, I have... I'm talking to you as I have George St. Pierre and Nick Diaz playing in the background because my brain can't just do one thing at one time. I have my iPad where somebody's tweeting me. It's amazing that anybody does anything anymore except for just keep up with everyone else.
Yeah, well, I mean, while I've been talking to you, I've had Suicide Squad on. you're right, I'm the same. I'll sort of like be listening to a podcast, but I'll have something like playing on my laptop, you know, the sort of like with the volume down and stuff.
Yeah, I get screwed up like all the time where like I'll be watching something and I will realize I have missed like 30 minutes of a show because I got sucked into reading some article. And all of a sudden I look up, I go, I don't know, who the hell is that? I don't know what's going on with this show right now. I think this is really bad writing, that I can't just follow it. It's almost like we need everything to be much simpler and less complex than ever before because we're indulging ourselves at a level that, you know, they didn't do back when Humphrey Bogart was saying, here's looking at you, kid.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to admit, I don't know if it's sort of is because of what you've just said, but I find a lot of TV shows now really hard to follow.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
I mean, Twin Peaks. Basically, Twin Peaks is Twin Peaks. You know, it's sort of meant to be like that. Yeah. But some like American Gods, which I've read the novel of and really enjoyed. And I found that really tough to follow.
I did two episodes, and then I was kind of like watching. I'm going, this isn't catching me. This is just not right. Mm. It didn't jump out at me.
Yeah, and Westworld, which I know a lot of people.
Oh well.
Love. Okay, Westworld. I liked the stuff that was going on in the park. You know, the whole Wild West and that whole sort of storyline. Yeah. But the stuff that was going on in the lab. They would be talking, and I would have no idea what they were talking about. And they'd be sort of like, you know, when they're doing those interviews with the robots and things, and I would find myself just sort of drifting, just totally drifting off. And the thing is, a lot of that stuff they were talking about was actually key to the themes of the TV series.
Yeah.
So I wasn't getting, but I was just finding the way they presented it just so boring. And it's like, it's Anthony Hopkins. And Anthony Hopkins is talking, and I'm basically bored by what's going on with Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, I had to make a very conscious effort when the show was on, be like, that's it, I'm turning my phone off, I'm going to put the iPad down, I know that this is good, I just have to, you know, not let the ADD get the best of me for just the next hour, I can do it. Because I had the same thing where I'd be watching it, and I'd be like, whatever, like, I just want to get the big picture. Did this guy get shot? Did that guy get shot? And meanwhile, there's a 15-minute soliloquy, and I didn't pay attention to it, and I'm looking up going, wait, what? Oh, shit. Anthony Hopkins is back? Huh.
Yeah. I mean, I find out with a lot of TV, there's, was it Legion? The X-Men TV show?
Yeah.
I mean, I gave up on that after about three episodes.
Oh, I feel so. Oh, man. Oh, that's my favorite new TV show. I mean, I loved the show, and it's weird because, like, as it went on, it actually got a little bit more, like, oh, they're doing actual comic book stuff in this. But, I mean, that's one of those where I was so enthralled with it. Because I think it's because I caught it just right, and then I told myself, again, you're going to have to turn everything off and just watch this. Whereas, again, 90% of the TV shows out there that I watch, it's almost to the point where if they're too good, I won't watch them because I have to pay attention, and I just want something where, you know, they do their beats, 15 minutes, here's a commercial. Oh, I can go back and read a little bit. You know, they got to play to my ADD more.
Yeah. But yeah, that one just didn't sort of, like, you know, spring to me. It just didn't catch me. I just kind of, I don't know. They just sort of go into such, like, you know, such a, like, weird ways of telling the story. And I don't know, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just getting old. And I'm just sort of, I'm sort of, like, bypassing it. I just kind of, I think, you know, I sort of long for the days when it's just like a show like The Shield. Did you ever watch that one?
No, I did not. Although I know that I should, because everybody says the same thing, which is you got to watch The Shield.
Yeah. It is so, I mean, that is one that you can sort of binge and just, but sort of like a steady, not sort of like watching like about 10 episodes of it, sort of like, you know, watching like an episode pretty much every day. And it's just such a good story. I mean, it is one where basically the stuff that, you know, nothing, everything just works in it. Not, there's nothing in there that basically, that goes off on a sort of, any sort of tangent. It's just everything that when you actually watch the whole series, everything that's happened there has basically been building towards a purpose. You know, you feel when, like, when afterwards when you've watched it, but I don't know if it's true or not, you feel like they're basically, what they started in the first episode, they already knew what they were going to do in about like five seasons time. It just works together that well. You know, you see a lot of TV shows where it's obvious that they're basically just sort of like going from like season, they might have a vague idea, but they're pretty much going from season to season and stuff. Whereas this one was basically, you just felt like they had a sort of like a clear sort of storyline of what they were telling. But yeah, the Shield, I think The Shield is probably my favorite TV show of all time.
Wow, well, that's, you know, that's a helpful recommendation.
Yeah, because I've watched a lot of TV.
Yeah, no, I've watched
a lot of TV
there.
At time.
Yeah, I guess to ask a final question, because my dog is looking at me, he's like, I want some food. I saw this ask the other day, and I'll kind of explain it or whatever. Is there any, like, if you could think of, like, a movie, TV, whatever, entertainment, where initially you were like, you just didn't like it or get it, and then you revisited it a couple of years later, and you're like, oh my gosh, I totally missed the boat. Like, for me, it was the movie The Fifth Element. When it came out, I didn't see it in the theater. It was always on TV, and I would see a little bit. I'm like, I don't care. This looks stupid. And then eventually, I ended up watching the whole thing, but I watched it basically backwards. I'd watch, like, the last 15 minutes, then the last half hour, then the last hour and a half. It just seemed to work out that way. And now, whenever it's on, I'm like, this movie's amazing.
Oh, do you know what? I really feel that there is something in my head that basically I had that sort of reaction with. I'm just trying to think what it,
like, there's been other shows, like, I'll say that, when I first watched, I didn't watch Game of Thrones from the first season. I kind of did a little bit. Then I picked it up and I watched it kind of. And again, I always kind of liked it. But I've since rewatched the whole thing from beginning to end, and now I just go, oh my gosh, this is really, really great. I love this now.
Oh God. Do you know what? I've got this feeling that there's a TV show where I basically started watching and ditched, and then sort of like a few seasons later, I basically sort of, I'm just trying, oh God, but I'm sure there is one. I think was one TV show, that I think it was Babylon 5.
Okay, yeah, I never watched that one.
Yeah, that was something that, I sort of, I started watching it, and I sort of, I just thought it was like, it seemed to me to be just like, kind of like a Star Wars type ripoff, the first season. And I don't really get into it. And then basically a few seasons later, somebody sort of, I caught an episode and it was like, oh, they've really gone in different directions with the characters. I'm going to have to sort of like, you know, go back and like watch all the, you know, watch all the original ones. It turned out to be at the time one of my favourite sort of like, you know, sagas to watch. So that one springs to mind. But lately, I think that the first time I watched Rogue One, I wasn't that thrilled by it.
Wow, really?
Yeah, the first time, I don't know what it is, but the first time I watched it, I wasn't that thrilled by it. And then I actually went to watch it again, and I liked it a little better. And then it basically is now like one of my favourite of the Star Wars movies. It's sort of my favourites. It basically goes Empire, New Hope, and then Rogue One.
Wow. But originally, the
first time I saw it, I don't know if I was disappointed with it. So I just kind of didn't think, oh, that was just like, you know, a big space battle. But when you watch it again, you sort of appreciate sort of how dark it is and how different it is towards the other Star Wars movies. So like stuff like, there's a scene in that film that I absolutely love. And it's when they're basically on the mission to basically steal the Death Star plans. And they're in the shuttle and they land on the planet and the base. And she does a little pep talk and she just comes out and she just says to him, they don't know we're coming. And she does this sort of this speech and she says, you know, if we get out of the ship, we'll take the next chance. And if we get into the base, we'll take the next. And she does all this thing and she's actually, you can see she's actually scared and all of them are actually scared. And that's different because when you see like the other Star Wars films, when they're going on these like missions, like Return of the Jedi, when they're sort of doing Vanessa, there's no like sort of like tension about it. They're just sort of like, you know, they're all sort of calm. They're all sort of got a job to do and everything. In this one, there's like a real sort of like foreboding that they're sort of actually scared about what's going to happen, that they know that they're facing death and that. And I think it helps as well because when you first watch it, you pretty much know that not all of them are going to get this into Star Wars film. There's a reason why these characters haven't shown up in any of the other ones.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just that one scene to me I absolutely love because it's kind of like a real sort of like, you know, we're facing death sort of thing, and that's something that you don't really get in the sort of, you know, but you know, the Star Wars films are generally like, you know, fantasy. You don't really get that heavy sort of concept to it. So you know, so that one, we'll have to do this again. I'll have to come up with something.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
There's something in my head that sort of tells me that there's a series that I didn't take to the first time along. And then when I watched it, you know, but, I'll have to ever think about this.
Well, for sure. So before we go, anything to plug?
I mean, basically, the two things that are basically, that I do for the Half-Guarded site now, and I've been there from day one.
Damn right.
I think I posted on one of the first weeks that you did, and I've sort of posted ever since. The things that I've sort of like settled into doing, I do the Invicta previews. So whenever there's an Invicta show, which Invicta is basically the top all women MMA outfit that we do show some pretty much like every two or three months now. At one point they used to be quite sort of spaced out, but now we've sort of got into regular feel. And I'll do previews of those shows. I'll basically talk about the fighters and what their backstory is, because a lot of the women fighters, I just find them more interesting than the male fighters. We always seem to have sort of like interesting backstories and everything. And Invicta is sort of like a really fun promotion. It's kind of like out MMA how it should be, where everyone's a bit sort of like, you know, wacky. They come out to their own, in their own like proper ring gear that they're sort of like customized to themselves. And it just feels, it's just got like a more underground feel to it than what the UFC does. The UFC does what it does really well, but I kind of like the sort of like, you know, the sort of down and dirty, you know, MMA feel to it, you know, that sort of alternative culture vibe. So I always do a preview for the shows. And if anything like really major happens, I'll do like a recap if anything like, you know, real sort of thing. But the other thing I do, which I try to do an article every sort of like every 2 weeks or every week sometimes, is basically I do the Couch Zone Movie Club, where I basically, so like I've already said, I basically choose like four movies to talk about, and basically sort of like, you know, all the movies that I've sort of watched throughout my life and meant something to. And I have a cross range. I sort of do like the cheap and cheerful, the, some like really bizarre movies that I've chosen, some which I've sort of, I know are bad, but still like, I did one on Star Crash, which is a very bizarre, Italian Star Wars ripoff. And so I sort of like mix in classics and things you might not have seen or missed and stuff. My next one is actually going to be a little different, because every so often I'll do like an anti-movie club, where I basically have four films that I absolutely really dislike. But the normally films that I dislike that are really well received and everyone else seems to like. You know, so so I've basically got four choices. One of my choices actually for the four that I dislike is actually a film that whenever they do like the top 100 movie lists, always shows up, and I don't know why, because it's a film I can't stand. But you'll see, it's a film that basically stars Tom Cruise, so that might give you a bit of a clue.
Huh, well, he's got a new movie coming out, everybody. I know you're all listening, you want to go see him. What the fuck am I doing? It's not a sponsor. I don't care. So, Daza, that's fantastic. Thank you for coming on here. And, I would say ruining Stephen King, but it's Stephen King. letting us all know that I should never hold him in high esteem because he's a dirty, dirty pedophile. And for everybody else out there, again, check out his stuff. If you don't read it, you're kind of missing out because it's, like, the best stuff we've got. And on that note, everyone, we'll be back some other time. And until that time, thanks for listening.
I'm finished.